Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Welcome back, one and all, to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. We're so glad to have you back here at the McBurney compound. Quite a compound it is, by the way. Every spring, without fail, for the last, let's see, when did we first move into a house with sprinklers? That would have been 2007. 2007 was the first time we had sprinklers. Every spring since 2007, something has cracked, broken, sprung a leak, or just completely flipped out with the sprinkler system, the irrigation system, I should say. So I go out to set things up, get the McBurney compound hydrated again, and I have an inch and a half ball joint cracked right down the side. That's right. And so, have you ever just suspended reality and hope? I looked at the crack. It's about an inch and a half long, right next to the on and off lever there. And as I turned the main water valve on, I thought to myself, well, maybe it won't leak. And I heard a gush of air, and then, of course, I was sprayed by the water. So after muscling this inch and a half ball joint off the counter-threaded pipe fitting there, which was quite an ordeal, let me tell you that, I call up the local irrigation supply. I say, I got an inch and a half ball joints cracked up the side. Is that something that you would have in stock? He said, are you sure it's an inch and a half? Because that's not consumer grade. That's agricultural grade. And I said, well, I think I've got an agricultural grade irrigation system, my friend, because I measured it's an inch and a half. He said, you can't get those. I said, yeah, I can't get those. Well, he says, we don't have them in stock. They're too expensive. I'm like, oh, great. That's just what I wanted to hear. Not only is it rare and strange, it's also expensive. Anyway, there's a little bleeder valve on the ball joint that I did not notice in the fall. And, well, I noticed it in the spring. And I'll notice it next year, but mark my words, there will be some other item because it never fails. I spent a day and a half blowing out this irrigation system just to avoid this. And here I sit. Anyway, praying for rain now. All right, yes. I'm joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. She and I, by the way, are part of the new agrarian chic movement. That's where people who have no business moving out into the country get so sick of the suburbs that they just flee the cities, they flee the suburbs, and they're moving out into the country in droves. And we're on the cutting edge, we hope. But yes, the agrarian chic movement. You'll be reading more and more about it because my extremely attractive audio engineer and I are often on the cutting edge of deep and wide social movements. And we hope you'll all join us. Yes. Agrarian chic. I believe I've coined that term. Yes. Now, what do you think the return on investment is on a pair of peacocks? Actually, not a pair of peacocks, we learned. They're actually peafowl. And the female is the peahen. And the male is the peacock. Now, when we got the chickens, I was talked into chickens because there was a return on investment with the eggs, and I thought it could be profitable. Now, with the peacocks, the return on investment is something quite different. You can't sell peacock eggs, and they're not a big market for their meat. Not that we would ever kill them for that type of purpose. But the peacocks, they eat all manner of creeping things. And so we have secured a peahen and a peacock for the McBurney compound so that they will spend the spring and the summer and into the fall, eating all manner of creeping things. And there's your return on investment. Because one thing we noticed living out here on the prairie over the past year was that there are all manner of creeping things. It's unbelievable at times. So we got the peacocks, and we're very happy. They're living in the walk-in chicken coop with the chickens. We've been assured that chickens and peacocks can live in peace with one another. And so we're looking forward to, apparently once they're mellowed out and domesticated, you can just let them run around the property and they come home at night, which I didn't know. I didn't know that. And that should be pretty fun because there's a lot of ground to cover and many, many creeping things. So that's what the peacocks are for. And so there. Should I get to politics and the news and all that? Kind of depressing. Well, there's a few interesting things. They're not that interesting. I've got a new game that I've started playing. I want to challenge all of you to play it along with me and see if the game goes the same way for you as it goes for me. Turn on any news channel, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC. Turn on any talk radio station at any time of the day or night and count the number of seconds before you hear the name Trump. For me, it's averaged 5 seconds or less for a solid week. So if Donald Trump was running for president just to become more famous, he has already won. Yes. The last time I played this game, by the way, was in 2008. And I used to count down for the name Obama. Yeah. And it was typically about 5 seconds back then, too. So things change. Things remain the same. So play that game with me. Any show, any news show, any talk show, any time of the day or night, within 5 seconds, you will hear the word Trump. All right? So play along if you care to. And feel free to send me your commentary. Very, very interested to hear from everyone out there. All right, let's start with, well, I'll start with the, this is an appalling story, but I'm going to start with the positive. It's from the Justice File down in Texas. Pablo. How do you confuse David and Pablo? Anyway, Pablo Vasquez had appealed his execution a number of times, but a stay was denied recently, and he was put to death at 6:35 p.m. on April 6th. Why am I happy about this? Well, listen to the details. Let's see. He killed a 12-year-old boy in 1998 after what he called a satanic calling. A satanic calling. Yeah, what was the calling about? Well, Vasquez struck the victim in the head with a piece of pipe and a shovel. When the boy's body was found, this is a 12-year-old boy, by the way, 1998. When the body was found, the boy was missing one of his arms and part of the other arm. He had no skin on his back. He had a hole in the back of his head. Vasquez admitted hitting the 12-year-old boy in the head with a pipe and cutting his throat. He says, the blood was dripping, and I got it all over my face, so I don't know. I mean, something just told me to drink the blood. That's according to a statement, a transcript recorded by police. So he drank the kid's blood. By the way, the victim was 12-year-old David Cardenas. Donna, Texas, 18 years ago, 18 long years ago, this young boy was killed. Now, you may understand that I am a pro-death penalty when it comes to convicted murderers or rapists or child molesters or kidnappers. So this fellow was convicted, and it's been 18 years. But one other positive note from the story, the murderer, Pablo Vasquez says, he said, quote, on the eve of his execution, Pablo said, I am sorry to David's family. This is the only way that I can be forgiven. You got your justice right here. That was the statement of the murderer And so maybe he repented. The death penalty does work, by the way. It helps people to repent when they realize they're about to meet God. So hopefully this murderer had the opportunity to find repentance. As we know that the merciful and living God is gracious enough to forgive even the most vile of murderous maniacs. And this gentleman certainly qualified as that. Now, one other note, the execution, as noted by CNN, the execution is Texas 6th of this year, 2016. There have been now 6 executions, and I ask myself, I wonder how many murders there have been in Texas this year. And I wasn't able to do a deep, heavy-duty amount of research, but the very first headline when I looked this up told me that there's been over 40 murders just in Dallas, Texas, in 2016. And so multiply that by however many major metropolitan areas there are in Texas, and there you have a lot more than 6, that's for sure. And by the way, there were 21 mass shootings in Texas in 2015. 21 mass shootings. That's where 3 or more people are shot. And a mere 6 executions so far this year in 2016, hence all the mass shootings and the murder and the bloodshed and the mayhem, because there is a lack of justice in America, even in Texas, which CNN regards as a bloodthirsty capital punishment magnet. So there you have the justice file. All right, now let's go to the scared religion file. We have a lot of different religion files because religion is a multifaceted topic. This is the scared religion file. Bradley County, now where is this? Bradley County Sheriff. We don't know what state this is in because I haven't done an appropriate amount of research, obviously. WRCB-TV in Bradley County reports that a Bradley County Sheriff's Facebook post that was published on Easter Sunday quoted Bible verses, depicted a cross, and had a statement attached reading, "He is risen," unquote. That was the Facebook post by a county sheriff, Bradley County, anywhere USA. Well, the post prompted the American Atheist Legal Center to send a letter to the sheriff. Do I have the sheriff's name? Eric Watson, he's the Bradley County sheriff. So the American Atheist Legal Center sent him a letter asking him to please stop promoting Christianity in his official role as a sheriff. The sheriff responded, "Well, if you don't like it, go to someone else's Facebook page. How about that?" That was his response. So this is the scared religion file. Why are atheists so uncomfortable, seemingly terrified and afraid about something, someone, in whom they do not believe? What makes them so scared? Why do they get so on edge every time they see a cross or they hear a reference to the resurrection? Easter, the Easter season, they go underground. Or you'd think they'd go underground. Or they just ignore it or they'd laugh at it. But instead, they hire lawyers and they send letters and they harass people and they file lawsuits. And they just get all up in arms every time you mention God, and especially if you mention Jesus Christ, and they lose their minds when you imply that Jesus Christ rose from the dead in order to forgive the sins of the world. That's what freaks them out, the sins of the world. They hear the word sin and they go ballistic. They don't even believe they're sinners. So I don't understand what they're so afraid of. Why do these atheists have to hassle this sheriff? He just posted a Facebook post saying he is risen. If they think it's all a lie and they think the sheriff is just a kook burger, why would it bother them? I mean, look, I don't believe in elves. I don't believe in aliens. But I'm not out harassing Irish pubs. I'm not demeaning certain towns in southeastern New Mexico. It's the Weekly World View. I am Doug McBurney, and I'm back in the groove. It's Sunday again. I got my infusion of spiritual uplifting this morning, listening to the sermon at Denver Bible Church. It was very invigorating. And so I don't feel out of sorts anymore. I feel like I'm on my game again. And as you can tell, my extremely attractive audio engineer is on her game as well. And we're just so glad to have you on board. Now let's go to the culture file where we're going to report on death with dignity. Death with dignity. If there ever were an oxymoron, it would be death with dignity. Have you ever witnessed a person's death? There's no dignity involved whatsoever. It's the most undignified thing that ever happens to any human being is they die. They collapse. That's embarrassing right there, just to collapse. And then you defecate all over yourself. There's no dignity in death. Death was not a part of the plan from the beginning. And so it's completely undignified. But those who worship death and those who hate the living God, they, by definition, they have to worship death since they deny life. Well, they worship it and they say it's dignified and they want to do it with dignity. And we have an organization here. This is from the Seattle Times. It's about suicide. It's very appropriate that it's from Seattle. I remember the early 1990s, Seattle was the home of the suicide chic movement, mostly amongst grunge bands. Big movement up that didn't last very long. Anyway, let's see. The Washington State Death with Dignity advocates are upset that because a drug company has doubled the price of their favorite medication to kill themselves. Well, actually, they kill other people. They help other people kill themselves, which could be interpreted as killing other people. Because if they killed themselves, there would be no Washington State Death with Dignity advocacy organization, because they'd all be dead. But they're somewhat hypocritical, and they're all still alive, and they're looking for drugs to kill other people as painlessly as possible. Yes, so this drug company has raised the price, doubled the price, of a lethal medication. Listen to how the Seattle Times states this. Lethal medication some terminally ill patients use to end their lives. To end their lives. So peaceful. So dignified. We used to call that suicide. And there was a social taboo against suicide. And there wasn't a whole lot of suicide going on before the taboo collapsed. Sometime around the release of Nirvana's second album, I think, was when the taboo against suicide eventually. I mean, people used to freak out about suicide. When Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin died, people had the good sense to hope that it was an accident. Anyways, my how things have changed. That buttresses my theory that grunge actually killed rock and roll. That was the end. If you were wondering when it died, it was then. But that's a different topic. Now, these death worshipers, these death with dignity advocates, they've come up, according to the Seattle Times, they've come up with a new mix of medications that induces death for a mere $500. Yes, the drug company, by the way, raised the price of their favorite drug to $3,000. $3,000 for a fatal dose. But the death worshippers have found a concoction for $500. That's according to Dr. Robert Wood, a longtime HIV/AIDS researcher who now volunteers with End of Life Washington, an advocacy group, according to. I find this very disjointed. End of Life Washington. Can you imagine going to work every morning? You walk in the building, the marquee says End of Life Washington. This is your career. I bet this guy didn't graduate first in medical school. Anyway, End of Life Washington, welcome. Let's go through employee orientation. Just can't imagine what the employee handbook looks like. All right. So this doctor says, we thought we should concoct an alternative that would work just as well And this drug does work as well. It's meaning people are just as dead, I suppose. To ensure that cost doesn't prevent terminally ill patients from making the choice they want, they've made this new drug cocktail, I guess. And people in California were working on it feverishly because California has a suicide legalization law that's takes effect later this year. People are just chomping at the bit to kill themselves in California. Well, actually, they're not. I think that there's a lot of people chomping at the bit to kill other people in California. You see, the advocates for suicide, they're not that interested in killing themselves. So California will be looking to see End of Life California. I don't know if that domain name's been taken, but if there's any entrepreneurial folks in the audience, definitely look into that. Let's see. One of the end-of-life advocates, the president of the board of the Death with Dignity National Center out of Portlandia, Oregon, says, "We've always had the belief that no matter who you are, whether you're rich or poor, you should have access to a lethal dose of medicine." I apologize. I have a rather dark sense of humor. That just seems really odd that he could say that with a straight face. He wants the equal access, whether you're rich, poor, whether you're good-looking, fat, or skinny. We want you to be able to kill yourself. You should have access, just like Donald Trump, to a lethal dose of drugs to end your life in a peaceful and dignified manner as you collapse and defecate all over yourself. Dignified. Let's see. What happened here was Valiant Pharmaceuticals, a evil big drug company. What do they call it? Big Pharma. Valiant acquired the rights to Seconal, which is the trade name for a certain drug commonly prescribed for aid in dying. What Valiant did after it acquired the rights to this drug was it doubled the cost from $1,500 to more than $3,000. The interesting thing about this was that the drug is a 90-year-old sedative that once sold for $150 for a lethal 10-gram dose. And the reason is, 90 years ago, people weren't killing themselves with it. It just wasn't chic, wasn't fashionable 90 years ago. There was still a social taboo against the idea of killing yourself. And there was certainly a taboo against advocating that you be allowed to help other people kill themselves. That was interpreted as murder back when Seconal was first introduced onto the market. Hence, the drug was relatively inexpensive. That's from the Culture of Death file. Thank you very much. Let's move on. And we'll go from the Culture file to the Homo Lie of the Week. We need a musical theme for that. The Homo Lie of the Week. Well, this is the first time we've done the Homo Lie of the Week. So you'll have to forgive my extremely attractive audio engineer for being unprepared with the musical accompaniment. But the Homo Lie of the Week is the headline that was up on all the major news sites this past week, stating that a man shot his son because he's gay. That's the big Homo Lie of the Week. If you peruse the news online, as I am wont to do, you saw this headline, "Man Kills Son Because Gay," right? Well, that's the big Homo Lie of the Week. If you clicked through that link, took you to the LA Times, and the headline on the LA Times story did not say that a father shot his son because he's a homo. That's not what, no. The headline in the LA Times says, "Neighbors said gay man shot by father had troubled history." Yes. But then the LA Times opens with, "Friends and neighbors of a man who has been charged with killing his son because he was gay said Saturday that the young man had a troubled history and was involved in several incidents that resulted in the police being called to the house." So what happened was Shahada Khalil Issa was charged with fatally shooting his son Amir outside the family's home earlier this week, and the LA Times dutifully says because he was gay. Father shot the son because he was gay. Authorities, by the way, after making the Homo Lie of the Week, The LA Times asserting that the dad shot the son because his son's a homosexual. If you read down about 12, 15 paragraphs, you'll discover that authorities also discovered the victim's mother on the bathroom floor, and she had been dead for a while. Now, at last report, she was not a homosexual, but she was also murdered by the father. The son had been using the back of the house as an apartment, but his parents were seeking to sell the house and evict their son. The police sergeant reported that he was not aware of any disputes related to the victim's sexual orientation, but that's buried way, way down in the story, so you have to actually read a whole lot of words before you get to the fact that this father didn't kill his son because his son was a homosexual. The father killed the son and his wife, by the way, because this is just another family detonation in America. Because there is no justice and murderers are not put to death swiftly, murder has become an option in solving familial disputes. Relieving the pressure in a family dispute, one option is now killing everyone. And then sometimes killing yourself as well. So this is actually just, it's not that the father killed his son because he's a homosexual. It's just a family detonation. They happen every day in every major metropolitan area in the country. If we wanted to, here at the Weekly Worldview, we could do every show for the entire hour, every day of the week, just talking about family detonations. But we have to move on to other news because that would get very depressing. There is a solution for this, by the way, for the family detonations. And that's the swift and painful death penalty for convicted murderers. That would just take that option off the table for most people. You see, if the punishment is severe enough, that scares most people from even considering doing something like killing their wife and their son because they can't sell the house and the kid won't move out and there's a lot of pressure. Murder just wouldn't be an option in that situation, but it was for this couple, and that's just sad. Now we'll go from the homo lie of the week to the homo wine of the week. Yes, not wine like from Napa. I mean wine with an H, W-H-I-N-E, the homo wine. And who's whining? It's, let's see, it's the husband of Sir Elton John is whining about the fact that he married Elton John, but he did not receive a title. You see, Sir Elton John is titled because he was knighted by the Queen, you see. And you see in the past, if someone married a knight, a benighted individual like Sir Elton, then the bride would receive a title. And apparently the husband of Sir Elton John is upset that he did not receive the title of Lady John, I guess. What is that what it would be, Lady John? I'll just let that one slide. The husband, by the way, of Sir Elton John is one David Furnish. David Furnish, did his parents know that he was going to grow up to be an interior decorator? His name is Furnish. So he says it's unfair that he was denied a noble title. Elton John, according to the Daily Mail, was knighted in 1998. And Mr. Furnish points out that a woman in the same situation would be known as Lady. Lady John, in this instance. Furnish says, the reality is, if a woman is married to a man with a title, she gets a title. I think everybody should have the same opportunities and the same privileges and the same honors. I think if we could just level the playing field in life as much as possible, then we'd all be in a much better place. And I would be Lady John. I want to be Lady John. I've always dreamed of being Lady John. Ever since I realized I had to be an interior decorator and I wanted to marry a flamboyantly homosexual pop star, I wanted to be known as Lady John, but I've been denied. And that's why I'm whining. That's right. It's the Weekly Worldview. We're back. Obviously, my extremely attractive audio engineer is very much on her game this week. Thank you, boys. Put the guitars away. We certainly do appreciate your efforts. Are they coming back? They're not coming back. No, the 80s are over with. They were interrupted by the 90s, and things have just never been the same. But oh, by the way, speaking of the 80s, as I was watching a television show that we avoided for a long time because of its title, we wouldn't even stop on it. It's called Pawn Stars, and it's on History Channel. History Channel has what do you call it when people just have to do something, they can't help themselves? They have a penchant. It's a penchant, I think. They have a penchant for putting sexual innuendo into the names of their shows. I've noticed this. I don't appreciate it. But anyway, we watched Pawn Stars once, and we realized that it's actually interesting because there's old stuff, and they talk about history, and you find out, about fake paintings and whatnot. It's an interesting show. So I and my extremely attractive audio engineer tuned it in last night, night before. And in walks a Playboy bunny with a Playboy bunny chair that she wants to sell at a pawn shop because it means so much to her that she's in a pawn shop in Las Vegas with it because it's very meaningful. Obviously valuable. If it wasn't valuable, I wouldn't be in a pawn shop in Las Vegas with it. It means a lot to me. Anyway, the Playboy bunny who walked in with the chair, maybe she was a Playboy bunny in the 80s, maybe 30 years ago, maybe even the 70s. And I'll tell you, time is not kind even to a Playboy bunny.
Hey, don't say that like as if they're pretty or something.
Well, I suppose you're right.
I'm upset about this.
Yes. Okay. Well, there you have it. You can see the bias in my extremely attractive audio engineer against the Playboy bunny types. Anyway, she was just a broken down, old, ugly thing. Walking in, dragging her bunny-shaped chair, trying to hawk it to these pawns. Anyway, I just found it to be a lesson in life. Don't get hung up on your looks, and don't get hung up on other people's looks. Because they're fleeting, my friend. They're fleeting. That was one ugly Playboy bunny, I'll tell you that. All right. And no, I don't remember what she got for the chair. It was so deeply meaningful that I think she got maybe $75 for it, something like that. Anyway, let's move on into the transgendered freak of nature file. That's too long of a name for a file. I have to come up with another name. But there's no other way to categorize this particular person. The Daily Mail, a British newspaper, reported that a former banker has become, transgendered, number one, and is on a quest to become a dragon. Now, I have mentioned to you people on the air that it is my position that transgenderism, with the surgeries and the hormones and the makeup and the fake, it's a mental illness, is what I've said. And this banker, is it a boy or a girl? Born Richard Hernandez, so it's a boy. This banker not only has undergone some sort of transgender modification, but is now on his way to becoming a living human transgender dragon. The 55-year-old former banker, because now deviant pervert has had nose modification, tooth extraction, eye coloring, had her tongue split so that it's a forked tongue, and has had full face tattoos, tattooing on the scales of a dragon as part of its transformation into a mythical beast. So, bottom line is, he can't stand behind the counter at a bank anymore.
Yeah.
Because even the bank robbers are afraid. So now, Richard Hernandez goes by the name of Eva Tiamat Baphomet Medusa. And people think I'm a bigot because I say that once you start down this road, you're into mental illness, and they think I'm some kind of bigot. Well, Eva Tiamat Baphomet Medusa had horns implanted into his forehead, tattoos and scarification on his face and chest that resemble reptilian scales. This is transhuman. This is the full extent of the mental illness of a homosexual. If you entertain it far enough, this is it. It ends up in something like this. Now, the Richard Hernandez, the former banker, is a pre-op M2F. They call M2F, male to female. So that means, now get this: this dragon person freak has gone through with the scarification and the facial tattoos. He's had the horns implanted into the forehead. He's changed his name to Eva Tiamat Baphomet Medusa, but still has not undergone the actual surgical procedure. You know, the final cut, so to speak. Has not done that. So, but still insists that it is transgendered for whatever reason. Anyway. He's in the process of morphing into a human dragon. He says, I'm becoming a reptoid as I shed my human skin and my physical appearance and my life as a whole. So here's a person who wants to shed their life as a whole. They want to completely escape from who they actually are. And if that's not a sign of mental illness, I don't mean to be bigoted. You know what I think is bigoted and cruel? Is to entertain homosexuals in their mental derangement, and especially transgendered people. To entertain that and to tell them it's good, to me, that is bigoted, cruel, mean, and hurtful. And me, if I met the guy, I would say, you need help. You have lost your mind. You're freaking me out. And so anyway, I would give him some good advice. I would say, you need help. I have some people you should talk to. You are deranged. But all of his friends, I'm sure, are just, it's just wonderful, Richard. It's fantastic. Be yourself. Be free. Be who you are. If you think you're a dragon, sweetheart, you be a dragon. I love the horns, by the way. Very chic. That's what his friends, and his friends, they think they care about him. He thinks they care about him. But he's deranged. He needs to be told he's deranged and very well may need to be slapped across the face just to get his attention. On a recent photo posted online to social media, the dragon human thing wrote, quote, I don't care what people say about me or my views. And if I have to, I will defy and stand alone against the world, but I will never make any compromise to my integrity. Rich. You've had horns implanted in your head, Rich. Rich, can we sit down? Rich, we need to talk. The scarification and the facial tattoos, that was a red flag to all of us, Rich. We're worried about you. We think you might need some help. All right. Do I want to even go? He had one other quote that the Daily Mail found it necessary to include in this news article. He posted to social media saying, I am what I am. I am my own special creation. So this is atheism, by the way. I've also posited the theory that the denial of the existence of God is in and of itself putting you on a path, a dangerous path, toward deranged mental illness. So people who deny the fact that there is a God and that he is the creator and that they're just a created being, they're on the path to some form of mental illness. Obviously not always this deranged. All the atheists don't have horns implanted. They don't do the scarification. But if you deny the obvious fact that there is a creator, it's obvious. The universe itself is evidence that there's a creator. And to deny it is to suspend rational thought. You are irrational when you say that, well, the universe Yeah, it either always existed or popped into existence, or there's certainly no need for a flying spaghetti monster to make the universe. So once you start down that path, I mean, you could end up Baphomet Medusa with a horn. It's just, be careful, folks. You need to guard your mental health against irrational positions, such as the idea that there is no creator of this universe. That is irrational and dangerous. And there you have that. All right. Now, speaking of irrational and dangerous, well, Huma Abedin is not irrational, but she is dangerous. Huma Abedin, this past week, was quoted in the British press telling the story of meeting Hillary Clinton for the first time. Yes, Huma and Hillary, a love story. Well, listen to this. I don't want to gross you out. My extremely attractive audio engineer is threatening to flee the studio if I continue with this story. And it is kind of gross, I will admit that. Huma says that the first time she saw Hillary, well, she described it, she says, "You know these things that happen in your life that just stick? Hillary walked by and she shook my hand and our eyes connected, and I just remember having a moment where I thought, wow, this is amazing. I remember thinking, oh my God, she's so beautiful. And she's so little," said, unquote. That's Huma Abedin on her first, "The first time ever I saw your face, Hillary." Now, I've always suspected that there was some kind of deviant type of relationship between these two. I've been more afraid of the fact that Huma's a part of the Muslim sisterhood, but I think that her and Hillary are part of the, you know, the sisterhood, so to speak, if you know what I mean. Huma was speaking on a podcast. Obviously, not all podcast hosts are able to carry an entire broadcast themselves, and they have to have guests on to kind of prop them up and get them through the times when they can't think of what to say. And so that was the case with this podcast. The podcast is called Call Your Girlfriend. Call Your Girlfriend, and they're interviewing Hillary Clinton about... No, I'm sorry. They're interviewing Huma Abedin about Hillary Clinton. And listen, here's what I found really interesting, folks. Huma met Hillary once before, as she took a group photo with the new White House interns. Yes, yes. Now, we all knew that Bill had taken his intern, but I had never suspected that Hillary took one for herself. I'm sweating. It's so good. I gotta. Excuse me while I wipe my brow. We'll get back into the news here. Man, I tell you what. It's probably one of the most underrated albums of all time right there. Actually, it was pretty big at the time. But we'll move on. All right, back to the news. I know, I talked about Huma Abedin and Hillary Clinton, and we all know how those Democrats are with the lesbians and the homos and the gays and the gay marriage and all of that. Those Democrats. Well, let's go to the Republican Party platform convention meeting vote that they're going to have. There's been a fund created, the American Unity Fund, which is financed by some of the GOP's biggest donors. According to Breitbart, they have launched a well-organized behind-the-scenes effort to lobby GOP convention delegates who will draw up the platform, which they intend will include an accommodation for same-sex marriage. An accommodation. An accommodation. That's the new catchphrase. That's for compromising your principles. That's what accommodation means. If you're willing to compromise your principles and just call it an accommodation, you might qualify as a delegate to the GOP convention in August, I believe, in Cleveland. Is it Cleveland? An accommodation. An accommodation, they said. And so who are these power brokers? Let's see. They're backing the group are billionaire investors and hedge fund managers. Paul Singer, Dan Loeb, Seth Klarman, and Cliff Asness. Asness? Maybe it's Asness. I never heard of the guy. Well, look at his name. Asness. Cliff Asness. Anyway, he is wanting to work out an accommodation so that all his homosexual friends can feel comfortable at the Republican National Convention. They don't want to be sneered at by all those breeders. You know how disturbing that can be. We have a quote from Jerry, leading the organization's convention campaign. Jerry says, "We are working to ensure that each and every delegate is empowered to vote their conscience and truly craft an inclusive Republican Party platform. We need to be inclusive. If the party hopes to survive, we need to be inclusive." Let's see. Who are these people? Paul Singer funded a campaign run by the Human Rights Campaign that attacked American Christian leaders for getting involved in fighting against the sodomizing of marriage overseas, which is occurring at a rapid rate. This fellow, Paul Singer, is also a supporter of Common Core standards, apparently a friend of Jeb Bush. In 2012, we are reminded by the writers at Breitbart that the Republican Party platform supported a constitutional amendment defining marriage as a union of one man and one woman. And, of course, that's what cost Mitt Romney the election, obviously, right? Well, that's ludicrous to even think that. What cost Mitt Romney the election was the fact that he was the father of homosexual marriage. He was the first governor to make sure it was instituted. As soon as the lawyers in black robes told Mitt Romney, "You got to start marrying off the queers," Romney bent over backwards to make sure it would happen. Instead of standing up and just saying, "Get out of my office with that, you bunch of perverts." That's what a good governor would do. He'd say, "Get out of my office, you're a bunch of perverts. And if you say anything like this in front of the children, I'm going to have you arrested. How about that?" All right. So anyway, the fight is on within the Republican hierarchy. There's a pile at the top, apparently, to try to get the GOP to, what we're looking for here is an accommodation. And you know what? Out of all the leading candidates right now who could be, who do we have? Let's count them off. We have Paul Ryan, who's the front runner. We have John Kasich, a front runner to be Ryan's vice president. And then we have some lawyer from Texas who I never heard of. And then we have a running joke for 40 years, loudmouth, egomaniac, naked charlatan, whose name I forget right off the top of my head. But I don't see any four of those resisting the accommodation that the pile of queers within the Republican hierarchy are angling for at the community. Not a single one of them. And I'll tell you what, all you friends of mine who are Christians who are slobbering all over yourselves for either the lawyer from Texas, right, or the pornographer from New York, I can't even comprehend you people. I'm so outside the mainstream. I'm so far flung from the mainstream. It's as if I exist in an alternate universe. But the fact is, I exist in the real universe, and you people have lost your minds. You know what you've done? You've made an accommodation. You've made a political accommodation in 2016. And let me tell you something. When we get to the other side and we look out over eternity, and we go out into eternity, whether or not I cast a vote for a compromised politician in the 2016 election is not going to matter a whit in eternity. What is going to matter are the principles that you taught your children and the principles that you insisted upon with your neighbors and your family and your friends. Those are going to matter because those have eternal consequences. Whoever wins the election in 2016, it's really not that big a deal. It's not going to matter all that much in the big picture. All right, so now I've chastised and alienated virtually all my listeners. And so I appreciate you sticking with the show. And I just want to send a shout out to those of you who have not unfriended me on Facebook. And there aren't very many left. Because I'm just outside. All right, now, some serious news. The home of David DeLayden, who made the undercover videos of Planned Parenthood as they chopped up babies and then sold off their parts. His home was raided by the California Department of Justice. The Attorney General, Kamala Harris, bought and paid for by the abortionists, said that she plans to review the undercover videos to see if the Center for Medical Progress and young Mr. DeLayden violated any state charity registration or reporting requirements. She said that could include whether DeLayden and a colleague impersonated representatives of a fake biomedical company or filmed the videos without Planned Parenthood's consent. Yes, the Attorney General, by the way, Kamala Harris, she has already determined with just a preliminary investigation that when those babies were chopped up and those body parts were sold, they followed the rules to the letter. There wasn't a single violation. Every chop was according to the every sale. Every time the cash register went ka-ching, ka-ching, all the rules were followed. Kamala knows. She's looked into it. Harris, the attorney general who raided David DeLayden's house, has accepted campaign contributions from Planned Parenthood. David DeLayden, by the way, has not accepted any support from Planned Parenthood, nor has any been offered. David DeLayden is not supported by any of the abortionists. In fact, he's their worst nightmare and their enemy, and I would really like to sit down and have a cup of coffee with the guy. I really would. I would invite him on the show, but we don't do guests. No. DeLayden previously said his group followed the law in making the videos. He put up a post this Tuesday past. He called the raid an attack on citizen journalism and said he will pursue all remedies to vindicate our First Amendment rights. So I don't understand this. I would have said, praise the Lord, put the handcuffs on me. Let's go. Let's go to jail. Come on. You want to dance? Let's dance. I would try to make these people look as vicious and cruel as possible. I would go into jail and I would stop eating until I was gaunt and emaciated. And my friends were calling me on the phone begging me to eat. But David DeLayden is as fine a young man as he is. He's fallen in with the abortion regulators and they've basically squandered this entire opportunity. And he keeps being handed opportunities like this to stand up for what's right. But I think young David, he just doesn't know what to do because he's getting bad advice. He's getting advice from people who told us we can stop abortion by passing rules on how we should do abortions. And we can make Planned Parenthood look bad by exposing the fact that they're not chopping up babies in accordance with the rules that we've written for that type of thing there. Is what's happened there. All right. What do we want to... We're almost out of time. Boy, it goes fast, I tell you. When you're on, I tell you. 6 million Catholics have refused to join churches recognized by the Communist Party in China. This is from the Tough Religion file. Father Dong Baolu is an underground Chinese priest. And when interviewed, he was asked why he didn't join the state church. He said, those who don't believe in God cannot lead us. Now, that's one tough guy. He said that, by the way, knowing that the police could kick in his door and drag him off to prison and send his family into the gulags. That's a tough religion. The Catholic Church in China, according to this Breitbart report, has been split into underground and open communities since 1958. In the past, members of the underground church could count on support from the Vatican in Rome, but many are now questioning whether the Pope cares about them anymore, seeing as he's a communist, right? I mean, they didn't say that. I said that. They're saying they worry that they can't take the Pope's support for granted anymore. Father Dong says, it's possible that Rome may betray us. If this happens, he says, I will resign. I will not join a church which is controlled by the Communist Party. Wow. That is one tough guy. I like this guy a lot. By the way, Breitbart reports that it is now recognized that Christians outnumber members of the Communist Party in the officially atheist nation of China. Christianity is growing so fast in China that some have predicted that it will be the most Christian nation in the world in another 15 years. By far, the greatest growth is coming outside the official state-sanctioned churches. Numbers are growing fastest in the unofficial Christian house churches and in the underground Catholic church. I have a friend, a Facebook friend. He's not just a Facebook friend. He's an actual friend who is preparing to fly to China with some of his children. He may have already left. He tends to be a little bit close to the vest about the travel schedule, but he has made several posts, and they are going to China to smuggle Bibles into China. And he's been doing this, I believe, for 15 years, maybe longer. And has it borne fruit? Well, I think it's borne a lot of fruit because we've got brave Christians in America who he made a great post this past week. I won't say his name because I don't want him to be arrested. He posted this week. He said, you know, my constitutional rights are important to me, but in the coming days, I am going to give up my right to free speech. I'm going to give up my right to the free exercise of religion. I'm going to give up my right to a trial by jury. I'm going to give up my right to carry a gun. I'm going to give it all up just so I can go to China and preach the gospel to people who have never heard it before. And he said, I gladly sacrifice all these rights to go and do this. And God bless him. I hope he's not arrested. But if he is, I can guarantee you he won't squander it, this fella. No. He would know exactly what to do if he were arrested. He would convert the entire prison, and they would march on the Chinese headquarters singing Onward Christian Soldier. Him and his sons and his daughters. What an amazing, brave example to all of us. One of my kids, I think, a few years ago asked me, why are Bibles black? I had this Bible and it's black, and I noticed, you know, most Bibles are black. I think Bibles are black because in many cultures and through most of history, Bibles have had to be hidden and smuggled, and so it became the norm to make them black. That's why I think Bibles are black, all right? It's kind of hard to go on to anything after that. I can't report on the woman found in a suitcase in downtown San Diego in broad daylight. Dead body in a suitcase. I can't report on that because that's a downer. And I want to leave on an uplifting note. I can't mention the fact that millionaires are fleeing Chicago because they're terrified of the crime. Millionaires are fleeing large metropolitan areas in record numbers all over the world. They're worried about rising racial tensions, and they're worried about crime, and they're worried about terrorism. In 2015, Paris lost the most number of millionaires. Paris, France, yes. Because people are afraid. But my friend Cal is not afraid. He's going to go to China. He's going to preach the gospel. He's going to give up his rights. He's going to give up what he cannot keep. To gain what he cannot lose. And I wish him all the best. And God's blessings upon him and upon you. This has been, well, you know what it is. It's time to go. And I wish I could stay, but I've got other things I've got to do. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at AmericanRightToLife.com. And who else? Who else do I thank? My streamer, audio engineer, of course. My other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.